hopefully tonight in the Aksava Kabbalah's commentary on Vayigash, we'll be able to get through the whole package. Because, gratefully, he doesn't have as much to say in this parsha as he does in other parshas. So the cut down to the package which you have in front of you was pretty simple to do. So here we are. Okay, the parsha Vayigash begins with one of the, I think it's actually the longest monologue in the Torah. It's about 15 psukim of Yehuda explaining to Yosef, not knowing that he's Yosef, the whole history of how we got to this point where now Yosef at the very end of last week's parsha, and probably the greatest cliffhanger at the end of any parsha, when Yosef says to them, "All right, you guys go home, and I got Binyamin," and so Yehuda says, "No, nothing doing," and he explains how we got to this point. So the first question that Ksav HaKabbalah asks, or addresses really, is how in Pasuk Chaf, when Yehuda mentions, so on page 250 in the Chumash, when Yehuda mentions to Yosef, says, "We told you that we have an elderly father and a younger brother, and his brother is dead." Now, did Yehuda know that he was dead? So that's really the question that he says. I mean, how can Yehuda say something which is a lie? So the first thing that the Ksav HaKabbalah notes is what Rashi says: that out of fear, because what's the fear? The fear is that Yosef is going to say, "Oh, your brother's alive. Okay, well, bring him up." So if he says no, our brother's dead, so Yosef can't say to him, "Okay, well, where's your brother?" So, of course, what's the Ksav HaKabbalah going to say? That how could it be that Yehuda is going to tell a lie? Yehuda doesn't tell a lie. So instead, what he does is he reinterprets the word Misa, to say that sometimes, and remember, we've been seeing all along that anytime he quote-unquote reinterprets a word, he's not really reinterpreting, he brings proof to his interpretation. So in this case in particular, he says that Misa can sometimes be referring to a lowering of somebody. It's a hashpala. If you skip to the Midrash Rabbah, it should be the third line, middle of the third line. V'yamar b'Midrash Rabbah, Reish Parshas Vayechi, the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, Ein Misa Eloshon Hashpala. That Misa can sometimes be referring to a lowering of somebody's status. And he goes on to use a Talmudic explanation of people who are considered to be like dead. And it's important to understand, of course, that this doesn't mean that their life is meaningless. It just means that they end up having a typically a lower status in society in terms of the way people either perceive them or treat them, which is a reminder, of course, that we have to make every effort to treat them more sensitively. And who are these people? Somebody who is poor, an ani, somebody who is a metzora, which we don't really see now, somebody who has a tzaraz, but somebody who is blind and somebody who doesn't have any children. So to say that their life is, I mean, where do we get that from? We get that from Rachel. Rachel says to Yaakov, "Give me children, and if not, I'm like dead." Okay, but in other words, what do you mean dead? That your life is meaningless? No, it just means that you have a lower stature amongst everybody else. We actually saw that when she says, when Yosef is born, she says that my cherpa, my disgrace has been removed. What's my cherpa? As being a childless wife, some may have even viewed her as being like a wife who's only for, you know, for marital relations and not for having children. So we can understand what that means. But in the end, he says, actually, let's just skip to the part towards the end where he says that we yalkut Isa, because the yalkut is essentially, that's the summarizing of his own opinion. It's the fourth to last line in this first paragraph. Well, the yalkut Isa, he says, "Afshar adam gadok Yehuda medaber davar she'enu barer v'achiv meis." Is it possible that Yehuda is saying something which is just so unclear, such as his brother's dead? El kacha mar Yehuda. Okay? Rather, this is what Yehuda said. Imani omer lo shu chai, hu omer li avyeu ilai. Right, what we said before. If I tell him that he's alive, this guy's going to say, "Bring him to me." Lefika chamar v'achiv meis ad kan. So he says that his brother's dead. Lo amar she divre Yehuda heim sheker, aval davar she'enu barurhu. It's not that Yehuda's words were a lie, but it's something that's not clear. Kevan shu kolel treyampe, because it has two different meanings. Maybe, look, first of all, maybe Yosef is dead, but Yehuda just doesn't know that. On the other hand, On the other hand, Lada'as HaShomea Misa Mamashis, to the person who's listening, it might mean that he's dead, or that's how they may interpret it. Lada'as HaMashmia, but according to the one who's actually speaking, Nefilas HaMadrega Levad, it could be referring to the lowering of stature. Okay, so, and he actually uses this, the Ksav HaKabbalah, I mean, uses this idea of two separate meanings in a different context as well, in one of the interpretations which I gave you, you know, just for the sake of seeing how he utilizes that again, let's just quickly turn to it. The top of page 3. Okay? And that is, the top of page 3 is when Yosef sends the agalos to Yaakov. What are agalos?
Wagons.
Wagons, right? What else could agalos mean?
Yoke?
No, that would be an ol. What's an egel?
Calf.
Calf, right? So take a look at what he says there. Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, Sarne diminagdu b'torasi. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure because that's Aramaic. I didn't look that up. Uchaperish Rashbam agalos ubehemos lemshoch. Agalos meaning wagons and animals to pull them. Ki lo haya adam yachol lehotzi min hamalchus agala ki yim al pi paro. You couldn't take a wagon out of Egypt unless Paro allowed it. V'dugmal ezo b'talmud ein para v'chazira yotza mimitzrayim el im kain. Nataloha inshala. That you couldn't take what's a para?
A
cow, right? What's chazira? I don't know, a female pig, right? Out of Egypt, unless you took its mother. Efshar agalos kan kafu b'haraso. Maybe agalos actually has two meanings. Min rechev. What's a rechev? A wagon. Okay, a wagon. Okay. Upara racha, yungus rind. Or rind. What's a yungus rind? A young animal, right? A young cat. But tamagalos paros rachos asuros b'mine rechev. That it's, you know, smaller cows, which were asuros. I don't know. I would imagine asuros is like asurim, like people who are enchained, but not chained. But we're not talking about people. We're talking about an animal. Vein kveda b'shino atenuos, and there isn't really a difference. In other words, it could be that Yosef sent wagons. It could also be that he sent animals. Which would serve, I guess, two purposes also. One is, theoretically, as food. Another one is to help schlep things.
But I've always learned that the last thing that he was learning...
Right, so that's Rashi. That's Rashi. Right. As you probably noted from this commentary and from the commentary that I used last year in this class... They'll often say, "Thank you, Rashi," but I have another way to look at it, right? So, yeah, I mean, that.
And in what way is this a sign to Yaakov that Yosef?
It doesn't have to be a sign. The point is that if no matter how you view agala, whether it means wagon or the kind of animal that he says you couldn't send out without Paro's permission, whatever it is that he's sending is coming from a royal person in Egypt, and the only way that that could actually be coming from Paro was if it's really coming from Yosef, because why on earth would Paro be sending something? Mm-hmm. Unless what they're saying is true. So, there you go. Okay. All right, the next one is, the next thing is actually a change. Another question which is raised in this very same pasuk, just getting back to where we were before, after saying V'achiv Meis, that his brother is dead, V'yivaser hu levado li'imo v'yaviv ahivo. So he says that he is left alone. Now, if you recall, this is actually worth looking at, in last week's Parsha, when Yaakov says that you can't take Binyamin, remember when he originally said you can't take Binyamin, what did he say? Let's take a look. He says, V'hu levado nishar. I want to find the pasuk. Anyone remember where it is? What? No, that's what Yehuda says. But Vikarola son Baderach, where is it? Ah, yeah, here it is. Pasuk Lamed Chet. It's the last pasuk in Parak Membeis, page 238. Okay, Vayomer, Yaakov says, Lo yereid im bini imachem. My son's not going down to you. Ki achiv meis, his brother's dead. Vuhu levado nishar. He's the only one who's left. Now, Vayivaser hu levado. I mean, you know, the idea that he is left alone and hu levado nishar, he's the only one left alone. They essentially mean the same thing, but they're different words. So the Ksav HaKabbalah's question is, if you're quoting Yaakov, so I mean, I don't know why that's even a question, by the way. Why the first one is actually a question. Meaning, if Yehuda is quoting Yaakov, Yaakov clearly said ki achiv meis. So why is it a question that Yehuda is lying? He's just quoting his father. So, all right, that's a different answer, I guess, to the question.
Actually, didn't he say that before Yaakov made that statement?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, but again, what's going on here is, oh, so maybe that's an answer to my question, that he's saying what we said. Okay, so you're right. That he's not really quoting Yaakov here. Okay, but in either case, Vayivaser hu levado. So the question that's being asked here is not why did he change what Yaakov said, but why does he use different language? Okay, Yaakov said hu levado nishar, and Yehuda is saying Vayivaser hu levado, which could mean the same thing.
Why does he have to quote?
No. That's not the question. The question is why does he use a different language? No, meaning, what's the difference between nishar and Vayivaser? That's really the question. Okay, I mean, you could use different language, right? So then what's the difference between those two? That's the question. Okay, so take a look. The difference between the word nun vav tuf resh, or the root that means to be remaining, and nishar, who im chelak ha-nishar chashuv be'inav nikra sha'ar. If it's important in your eyes, then it's considered to be nishar. That's why Yaakov says, hu levado nishar, that Binyamin is important. No, he's the only one that remains because he's important. And if it's something which is not so important, like from a carbon, something which is nosar, something which is useless, right? No good. So what is he saying? Since Binyamin is the only remnant from Rachel, that's extremely important to him. However, on Yehuda, Migodel Tirdosav, Yosav, Ayidemini Rachel, Yehuda, the sons of Rachel have been a thorn in Yehuda's side. Father, pay attention to us. What's only Rachel? Is you only Rachel's kids are your sons? Yosef, we got rid of. Binyamin, man, I mean, Binyamin's just like a little guy. Well, I mean, at this point, he's not. Binyamin's 30 years old. But the whole life, Yaakov's been paying, ever since we got rid of Yosef, got rid of that problem, it was just replaced with Binyamin. But we couldn't really do anything because Yaakov never let Binyamin leave his side. So this is what we've been dealing with. So in his eye, and now, does Yehuda really feel that way about Binyamin? I don't know. I mean, he clearly took responsibility for Binyamin, but sometimes people just talk the way that they're thinking. And so that's the point that I think that he's making here, that Yehuda is just speaking based on how he's experienced Binyamin in his life, even though he may not actually feel that way, but it's just reflecting on how he's always felt. Okay, and the last point that he has here on Yehuda's speech is in Pasuk Chaf Ches. Let's go back to page 250. Okay. Vayetzei echad v'yom v'omar ach tarov taraf v'lo re'isi v'adheina. V'lo re'isi v'adheina. So he says here, vav zo yishamesh k'milas ki l'nesinas tam. Okay, it's on the word vav. What is that? You know, vav we typically translate to mean and, so he's just saying that it means ki, that it means because, and it's giving a reason. Ki lo reisi vadhena, I have said that he is tarov tarav, that he was torn up. Ki lo reisi vadhena, because I have not seen him since that time. Okay, it must mean. I mean, if Yosef's alive, of course he would have been in touch, right? Of course. Well, Yaakov doesn't know why Yosef wasn't. Why Yosef disappeared, and he also doesn't know why Yosef hasn't been in touch, and therefore he assumes that he is dead. Okay, so that's all that that Yosef brings. Now, so of course, Yehuda, I'm sorry, that's all that Yehuda says here, and that's all that he says and what Yehuda says. So after Yehuda's speech ends, we're told in very dramatic fashion, the beginning of Parak Mem Hey, on page 252, that Yosef was unable to hisapek. Now, what does Lisapeg mean? What does Lisapeg mean?
To control.
Right, to control himself, right? And, you know, we have a great example of that in the Megillas Esther, right? With Haman, by Yisapak, Haman, by Yavavu, so. Right, so he can't control himself, right? The Chol HaNitzavim Alav. He can't control himself before all of the people who are standing in front of him. Who are all the people who are standing in front of him?
Egyptians.
Right, the Egyptians, the people who are in Yosef's court, etc. And maybe the brothers too, okay? So, right? I mean, that's clear what all this means, right? It's clear? What am I going to do? It's clear, right?
No,
right?
No.
Wrong. Okay. Right. Okay. So here we go. So just to play straw man, he shares. I'm not going to read the beginning part inside, but he quotes the Ramban. He quotes the Rabbi Abernel, for example, who says that Yosef has done everything mida keneged mida, that he's gotten them back for everything. And he rejects this, as we saw last week, that what is the perspective that Ksav HaKabbalah has in terms of everything that Yosef has done. He says Yosef at Tzadik. Yosef is, everything that Yosef is doing is just to make his dreams come true, but he's not trying to be vindictive, he's not trying to be evil, he's not trying to have his brothers suffer. Now, obviously, there are many commentaries who have different views as to what Yosef is actually trying to do. But his perspective was that Yosef is just being righteous in saying, God gave me a vision, this is what's supposed to happen. And so therefore, to suggest that Yosef is being awful to his brothers is not good. And also, some of the commentaries say that there are words which are missing. So, for example, skip to the part where it says, "Mikomakom leperish Ramban," which I think is going to be on the next page. Yeah, top line on the next page. "Mikomakom leperish Ramban chaser ikra b'mikra." Ramban says that there's something missing here. "V'hayarui lomar lechol nitzavim levakesh alav," that he should say he couldn't control himself with all the people who are standing levakesh alav. So, who are the people who are levakesh alav? Levakesh means to seek, to ask. So, it could be referring to all the courtiers. That's the right pronunciation. Or it could be referring to the fact that there are other people who are also
looking for food,
right? Just people around. So Rashi says, Pirish lo yachol lisbol sheyu mitzriim nitzavim alav v'shomim shechav mizbayishim. And Rashi says that Yosef couldn't handle the fact that the Egyptians who were standing there, they'd be hearing and it would be embarrassing. Uche'ilo amar. And therefore, according to Rashi's interpretation, v'lo haya yachol Yosef lisapek bishasam Lifnei, I'm sorry, Boshasam, Lifnei, Kolonit Savim Allah, that Yosef couldn't handle their embarrassment in front of all the people who were standing there. The Kamoshikas of Harabe Eliyahu Mizrahi, that's a super commentary in Rashi. The Gam Lefizet, Lishna Ketiyah Mikra. So he says, if that's the way you want to interpret it, then how do you view the Pasuk as having something missing? And what's the Ksavi Kabbalah's MO when it comes to the Torah and missing words? Right? What does he say?
Doesn't happen.
Which means, what is he going to do? He's going to say, "You're translating the words wrong." Okay, that's how we use this. Okay, so skip to the next line where it says, "Vihine." Okay, "Vihine kol ha'dechukim ha'ele." Everybody got it? "Vihine kol ha'dechukim ha'ele hu lufishim beforshim lisapek kamo vayirchatz panav vayisapak vayisapak aman." He says all these. You know, like there's just stretches. There's stretches in the interpretation because they assume that v'yisapak means what we said it means before, that he couldn't control himself. He wanted to do something which was against his, in other words, that Yosef didn't really want to reveal himself, but he had to. Right? Or he didn't want to do it in front of all the people, but he just, so he had to throw everybody out. Ksav HaKabbalah says, nope, not what it means. Avol mi yachrich, I skip in the parentheses. Avol mi yachrich en elazalo tov yoter lefareish lesapek mishorish pok she'inyano hutzah. He says, lehis apek, the aleph is grammatical. It doesn't mean what you're saying. Rather, the shorish, the root, is pevav kuf, which means to take out. Kimova tafek l'ra'ev nafshecha. Okay, that's a pasuk in Yeshayahu. It's actually not Yeshayahu Yudches. It's Yeshayahu Nunches. I looked it up. It has to do with bringing out things for those who are hungry. Okay? Sheperush totsi elav ritzonecha. To take out to him your desire. Skip to the end where it says ulufizeh, because this is the format that he always uses, where he gives all of his explanation and his support and his proof, and then he explains exactly what the phrase means. So it's the fourth to last line, third to last word. You see it? Ulufizeh. What does it mean that Yosef was unable to his apek to all who were standing? in the public nature of all those who were present, lo haya bicholto lahotzi milabis fasav. There were too many people around, so he couldn't bring out the words which were in his lips. Uladaber alehem masha haya birtzano kaes, and to speak to them what was in his desire at this moment. So what does it mean? Lo yachol Yosef lehisapek. Yosef couldn't bring out the words that he needed to say.
Couldn't express himself.
In other words, it was too busy everywhere around. It's not that Yosef couldn't control himself. Lo yachol lehotzi the words. He couldn't get the words out because there was just too much going on. So therefore, lo yachol Yosef lehisapek lechol anitzavim alav. Couldn't bring it out to everybody who was there because it's just going to throw, however you want to explain it, if you want to say that it means it's embarrassment, if you want to say that it's just too loud, too noisy, it's just going to create such a kerfuffle of reaction with everybody present. So Yosef says, I can't get out what I need to say because of how busy it is here, so everybody out, then I can talk to them.
It could also be that he's so overcome with emotion,
right,
that he can't speak.
Okay, that, right.
Sometimes when you just get so choked up.
Correct. So that's another way of explaining what he's saying. But again, his chiddush is that vayisapak doesn't mean he couldn't control himself or he needed to withdraw because of something else. That vayisapak just means he couldn't get the words out.
He said the same thing in the Megillah. Vayisapak alone when he goes back home, Zeresh. First.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Right. Okay. He's just challenging our base assumption of what the word means, and saying I'm going to reinterpret it to tell you that there's actually nothing missing in the text. Okay. That's just the way he operates. Okay. I love the next one. It's not a mind blowing one, but it's just the way in which he throws around the question mark. Right? Remember Yosef's response when everybody leaves. Yosef says, I am Yosef, ha'od avichai. It's my father's still alive. Okay, so what's Yosef asking? So in other words, Yosef has different things which are going on. When we hear the phrase, ha'od avichai, is my father still alive? So first interpretation is, look at Sha'alam Zeh, ki chashavu laima ha'shamra adhena she'yamus avihem bi'agon ha'yakadei she'yasigim uvukasham b'hashavaz binyamin. That maybe what they were saying up until now, that their father is going to die out of distress, is kedei that is sheyasigum uvukasham b'hashavas binyamin ube'emes in enochai. That maybe Yosef would say, you know, you're going to kill our father, so all right, you know what, forget it. But the truth is that their father is already dead. So the first question that Yosef might be asking is ha'od avichai, is my father still alive? Meaning, have you been lying to me the whole time? Okay, that's the Rabbah. So Yosef wanted to know the truth. Is my father still alive? Meaning, really? Or have you guys been lying? And it could be that the hey in ha'od is a question, meaning it's just on the word ha'od. Ha'od, meaning I get that he's been alive all this time, but through after all that you've been through here, okay, has he died since we started talking?
He says Nisa is not really death, but a lower.
Okay, that's.
Say chai is not, doesn't mean just life.
But right. Okay, but
why
Im
Evshar.
What?
If he's asking whether, since. Is he dead now, this moment, how would asking that the question answer? I mean,
the point is, it's just a different focus of the question. Meaning, ha'od avichai, have you been lying, and he's been dead since the first time you came here? Or ha'od, is he still alive after all that you've been putting him through? Because remember, when they first went back, they had food, and Shimon was in prison, and it took them a long time to return. They waited, the pastor told us in last week's parsha, they waited until they had used up all the food. And only then they came back. So Yosef might be wondering, look, he may have been alive the first time you guys came down, but what's going on now? Took you guys a long time to come back. You know, were you only able to come down with Binyamin because he died in the interim? Just a different way of looking at it. And again, that's what I'm really trying to bring out here, is to challenge our assumptions. Is that such a major distinction? Does it change in the way we view this? I don't know how much it changes things, but it's just a question of where Yosef's mind is in terms of how he might be expressing himself. I mean, in the last line, Im Efsharu Sheikhia Odavi Achar Avro Kol Avru Alav Kol Atzarosa Eila, could our father still be alive after all that has been happening, even of late? Okay, next one. I don't want to read the whole thing. Asher Mechartem Osi. What he the point which he begins with is that there's, and I think we saw this in Parshas Vayeshev, that there is the pasuk is vague when it describes that Yosef is taken out of the pit. It's actually pretty clear. The pasuk is not vague. The pasuk says that Yosef was taken out of the pit by Midianim, who sold him to the Ishmaelim, and it wasn't the brothers. And he, following the Rashbam and Chizkuni and others, say that the brothers didn't really sell Yosef. They thought to, they planned to, they wanted to sell him, but they were looking at the Ishmaelim from over here, and in the meantime, from over there, they weren't near the pit when this happened, and the Midianim heard Yosef screaming, and they took him out, and they sold him. So based on that, he says, look, if Yosef is aware the brothers didn't really sell him, so how could he say to them, Ani Yosef Achichem, Asher Mechartem Osi Mitzrayma, I'm Yosef whom you sold to Egypt. So take a look what he says. But he's there. Milas Mechartem, Eino Pol Mamashi, Rapol Musaveh. He says it's not a verb which is referring to a specific act. And again, he brings proof. I didn't give you the whole thing, but he says, but he uses a proof that it's something which is causative. Okay, Upol Musaveh, something which brings about a result. Kamo Ma'altambi. Right? When God says to Moshe and Aaron, you're not going to get to go in the land, or you're not going to lead the people, is Ma'altambi, because you did Me'ila. You used my name or my image in a way which was wrong. I mean, you actually used it for your benefit. And that's not what it means. Shepei Rusho Garamtem Me'ila. You caused others to not see who I am and what my role is. In other words, it's causative. Kain dan mechartem, kain tan mechartem. The reasoning of mechartem, you sold, means garantan mechira. You caused the sale. Why? Because they threw him in the pit. They abandoned him. They left him alone there. He's crying out, "Hey, let me out of here!" These minjanim come along. They hear some guy. They see him abandon him in a pit. They're like, "Hey, quick bucks! Let's sell them to the Ishmaelim." So that's the point. So now he also goes in to say that if the brothers did in fact sell Yosef, so well, then that's what it means. But based on the view that he did, that they didn't, then that's what we have. Okay, we move on. I don't want to read this inside, but just but let's take a look in Pasuk Zayin. I'll just tell you what it is. Vayishalcheni Elohim lefneichem lasum lachem she'iris ba'aretz. Okay, God placed me before you to give you a she'iris baretz. What is she'iris? What does she'iris mean? Okay, she'iris, right, means
translated
as survival. So they say, right, the article translates it to mean survival, but when we think she'er, we think she'ar, right, leftover. Like we saw before with Binyamin, a remnant, right? So there's another very well-known use of the word she'er. She'er. So you actually said the translation for she'ar. Right? What's she'er? I'll give you a hint. She'era, ksusa, yonasa, lo yivra. So what's she'er? No, ksus is clothing. And ona is marital relations. So what's she'er? Food. Well, there you go. So that's what he says. That's inyan mazon. That's smack in the middle. That it's referring to how he is... You know, that's basically what the article says. The article says survival, because survival in this sense is referring to food. He says, look, without me, there is no way you guys would survive. Okay, because Egypt would not give, you know, if Egypt is down to its last food, they're not giving it to Canaanites, right? Even if they're Ivri Canaanites, especially if they're Ivri Canaanites. So therefore, She'er refers to food. And I mean, that's an easy one. Like, She'ar, it's a different word. Same letters, different word. So
that's on my level.
I got one. That's good. That's good. Okay. All right. Move on. Okay. So the next thing that happens is that after Yosef sends up to his father to get them back, we're told Starting in, we're actually skipping a lot. Okay, so we're going to go into Perek Memvav now. We're told about how the Bnei Yaakov, the family of Yaakov, comes down. So, this is the type of thing that, you know, you read it and you say, okay, you know, it's nice, we get all the names, and some of these names are important for later on in the Torah, etc. But I'm going to highlight a couple of things, and let's see what we get here. Okay, Pasuk Tezvav, bottom of page 258. These are the sons of Leah and Dina. 33. Okay, and our scroll is very nice to us. Gives us a handy dandy chart, right? That shows us the numbers. That Dina is number 32, and Leah equals number 33. This is assuming that Leah goes down, okay, which is a good question. I mean, later on, Yaakov tells Yosef in next week's Parsha, Shama Kavarti Es Leah, that I buried Leah, so did Leah go down to Egypt? I don't know. Okay, anyway, but the number is 33. Okay, but how many are the descendants of Leah, really? That's really the question. If Leah is counted as number 33, so how many descendants of Leah are there that are counted?
I think you might be misreading it. Rachel is along the chart too. It's clear that Rachel didn't go down. I think it's the black lines that go down. And
well, look, I'm not trying to make a big deal out of it. Look at the chart because it gives us a number. You see the chart? The chart gives us a number to all the people, and you see that starting with Reuven, it goes to one, and then his children, and then it goes to Dina being number 32. The pasuk just told us 33.
Well, God is number 33.
Who is?
God is listed as the 33rd.
No. That's not that. I know that is not correct because God is in Zilpah, as we're going to see in a second. So what do they do to make it that number 33? They say that Yocheved is number 33, and that she was born at the gates of Egypt. So maybe that's a possibility. Okay, so that's interesting. We're going to see that there's another possibility. We're going to see another possibility in a second. Okay, so that's how they list it because they put Yocheved as number 70. In there, under Levi. You see that? So that's number 33. So maybe it's not Leah. Okay, but anyway, but how many are Leah's descendants for sure? 32, because the last number is Dina. Okay, that's the point that I'm trying to make. Ubnei Gad. Okay, so we have Gad and Asher. So let's look at Asher rather. Pasuk Zayin on page 260. Ubnei Asher, Yibna v'Yishva v'Yishvi Uriah v'Serach Achosav. So you have a number of sons and Serach, their sister. Okay? It doesn't say Serach Bas Asher or Serach Bito. What do we see for Dina? The S Dina Bito, right? Remember Yaakov's daughter Dina. Here it says Viserach, it doesn't say Serach Bito, it says Serach Achusam. Strange language. Okay? And then we're told Ubnei Bria Chevra Malkiel. So Bria had kids, so Asher has grandchildren. Zilpah's descendants are how many? 16. Okay? B'nei Rachel, Pasukitas, we're told you have Yosef and Binyamin. And how many are there? So Binyamin, we're gonna Yosef has two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. And Binyamin has 10 sons. And what's the final tally for Rachel? Pasukhafez? Arba'asar. Hold on. So Yosef has 10. I'm sorry, Binyamin has 10, so it's Binyamin plus 10 is 11. And Yosef has 2, so that's 14. Okay, so you get the number 14. And then the next thing we see are the children of Bilhah. Bilhah has Dan and Naphtali, and Dan has one son. Naphtali has 1, 2, 3, 4. Eleb and Bilhah, what's the final tally? Kal Nefesh Shiva. Okay, now when you add up all those numbers, right, what do you have? You have 7 plus 14 is 21. And you have 6 plus 16 equals 37. And 33 equals 70. Okay, except that Yocheved isn't mentioned. So that's how we get Yocheved. Yocheved isn't mentioned. Right? Okay. So that's just important to bear in mind. So is Yocheved really number 70? Or is perhaps somebody else? Let's take a look at Ksav HaKabbalah. Two comments about this. Actually, three comments. So we're going to go through Yitzayin, Yitchas, and Chaf. I didn't read you Pasuk Chaf. Let's just read that. Vayivaled Yosef Eretz Yisrael, Asher Yalodo Lo, Asher Yalodo Lo, Asnas Bas Potifar Kohen Hon, Es Menashe V'Sefraim. So Yosef had two sons who were born to Asnas, the daughter of Potipharah Kohen Hon. Okay, that's just that's the background. V'Serach Achosam, back in the Ksav HaKabbalah, page 3. Serach Achosam, Kasav Ramban. Ramban writes that. Okay. Lo Amar Bas, Asher, Ki Lo Yisabito, Ki Yim Bas Yishto, Shai Salam Yishacher. The Ramban says, she's not called actually Serach Bas Asher. She's called Serach their sister because they were the daughter of Asher's wife, but from a different husband. What? Asher took a lady who had been married before, okay, and she had she brought Serach into the marriage. Uchatagamun klus bas Asher bas itz Asher. She's the daughter of the wife of Asher. Okay, that she came from a different marriage. L'chein amar kan v'serach achusam, and that's why it says here, and Serach their sister. She was her sister from the mother, common mother, but not from the father. Whatever. That the Sefer Yashar says that the wife of Asher was this lady, etc. She brought Sarah, her daughter, into the marriage. She was 3 years old at the time. And she grew up. She went to a very nice girl seminary. I'm just kidding. She grew up in Yaakov's house. We had dvarim tumuim. So the Ksav HaKabbalah says, "What are you talking about? The imkain eich nechshuva bechlal sheish esrei nefesh yalad azilpa Yaakov. Then how could you say that she's one of the 16 of Zilpa's descendants? And you know, look at art school the way they just counted up. Clearly, Sarah is numbered. She's numbered." Okay. If you want to say that Zilpa raised her, you know, which is possible. In other words, the Ksav HaKabbalah is showing how others explain Serach Achosam to suggest that she's not actually Asher's daughter. And he says that doesn't make any sense because of the other evidence. Okay, so I had never heard this view that she might not, that she was from a different father. I'd never heard that before. You know, whenever we refer to her, we always call her Sarah Bas Asher, right? Who revealed to Yaakov that Yosef was alive? Sarah Bas Asher. So that's basically what he's saying. She's Sarah Bas Asher. She's not the daughter of somebody else. Okay, Sheish Esrei, Bnei Ha'imahos, Haya Kefel Mebnei Ashvachos. So remember how I pointed out the numbers before? So the Leah one was questionable. Why? Because we're only told 32 names. And yet the Torah gives us the number 33. So how many did Zilpa have? 16. 16 times 2 is 32. How many did Bilhah have? 7. 7 times 2 is 14. How many did Rachel have? 14. Okay, so look what he says. Kol gvira shnei pamim kamo shiv chazak b'nei leil lamed beis. So he says here, v'rak yocheved eshlima l'minyan lamed gimel l'rabo seinu. He says, the rabbi said that yocheved is number 33. Ule mechilta de Rabbi Shimon Yochai, Yaakov atzmo yishlim. According to the mechilta, Yaakov is number 33. U b'nei zilpa shiv chaza hachetzi v'hu tazayin. So Zilpa is 16. Okay, so that's one view of who number. Those are actually two views of who number 33 is. Is Yaakov number 33 from Leah? Is Yaakov group there, or is it Yocheved? Well, take a look at the next one. Okay, this is fascinating to me. Asher Yoladalo Osnas. For the end of Miketz, Parshas Miketz, we when Yosef is given Osnas as a wife, we're told Ki Osnas Yoladalo Sefraim Menashe that Osnas gave birth to Ephraim Menashe. V'haya chol omar b'kitzur b'nei Yosef Menashe v'Ephraim kibishar banim. All I had to say about Yosef was that Yosef's children were Ephraim Menashe. Right? Simple. Ulamanda amar b'maseches sofrim b'sof perak v'al kidina, or I'm not sure actually what put Pechav Al Green, says, I don't think Masechta Zovim has 21 chapters. Kidina Holida is Asnas Mishchem. Dina was the product, I'm sorry, Asnas rather, was the product of Dina from Shechem. V'kachu b'pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer, b'midrash b'chir, b'yalkut, right? There's a lot of midrashim that have this thought process that Asnas was the product of Dina and Shechem, and she was put up for adoption, and she was raised in Egypt by this Potiphara fellow. Okay? Ki Asnas bas Dina hi, and he says Liosif Mitzrayim. And of course, this follows along the line. It says that Potiphara and Potiphar is the same person, and that Potiphar's wife, she wanted to have relations with Yosef because she somehow had this vision that Yosef was going to have children through her family, and that through her family actually meant through her daughter, or her daughter by adoption, the daughter meaning Asnas, etc. Now we actually saw, I think I mentioned, actually I'm not sure if I mentioned it here, I think I mentioned in my class on Shabbos, I don't remember what it was, that the Ein Ish Me'anshei Habayis, that when Potiphar's wife came back, was trying to seduce Yosef, and there was no man there. And so one of the Midrashim says there was no man there, but guess what? There was a woman there, and that woman was Asnas, and she told Potiphar everything. Okay, and that's why later on Yosef's like, I remember you. You're good. You saved my life. So it was a good shidduch. Imkei nuchalamar shehi eshlima es minyan shivin nefesh. We could say maybe that Asnas is the one who finishes, who is number 70. Okay, v'chalalos v'chalalos akasuv mashakasuv l'malak kol nefesh banav nusav. When it says all of Yaakov's descendants, well, guess what? If it's true that Asnas is the daughter of Dina, then she's one of Yaakov's descendants. Even though he has one daughter, she's included in his children. And that's why Asnas is mentioned again, because she's part of the tally. Okay, another called Shaisa Basanusa. And maybe she's called Asnas because she's the daughter of the one who was raped. That when it says Neshe b'nei Yaakov, it's the wives of Yaakov who are not included in the tally. Because they were not children of Yaakov, right? Yaakov, they did not come from Yaakov. And there's another view that Dina is mentioned because Shimon took her under his wing and that she married her. And there's another view, by the way, that Shaul ben Akranis, who's one of the sons of Shimon, is the son of the product of Dina and Shimon, because Dina is called the Kananis because she was taken by a Kanani, by Shechem. There's a lot to be said about that. But to me, it's fascinating to consider, because I knew about this idea that Asnas was the descendant of, was the daughter of Dina, but it makes a whole lot more sense than Yocheved for many reasons. Okay, number one being that if Yocheved enters Egypt at the time of, is born rather at the time that they enter Egypt, that means that when Amram marries her, how old is she?
Old.
130.
You're
right. 130. And then she's having, I'm sorry, when she gives birth to Moshe, rather, she's 130. Okay, fine. So when she gives birth to Miriam, she's 124. And when she gives birth to, right, it makes Sarah look like a spring chicken, right? Okay, so when she gives birth to Miriam, she's 124. When she gives birth to Aaron, she's 127. And when she gives birth to Moshe, she's 130. Very hard to, it's a lot easier to see Levi having her later in life than her being, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm just saying that it's a lot easier to accept this as being Asnas being number 70 because she's mentioned here, whereas Yocheved isn't mentioned here, and there isn't great evidence of her being present at this time. Okay. all right. Yeah, the next one, which I think, did I give you Yaladlo? Yeah, the next one just mentions the possibility that Ephraim and Manasseh are twins, which I found to be fascinating as well. Okay, let's move on. Let's do Lamed Daled, and we're going to finish these. These next two are actually related, about Admasa Kohanim and Gen Kikil Vasper time. So let's take a look. Okay, let's take a look. Pasuk Lamed Daled. Yosef meets Yaakov, they cry, etc. And Yosef says, all right, you guys are going to go meet Paro, Pasuk Lamadal, last Pasuk in the Parah, page 262. And Paro's going to ask you who you are, what you guys do. Martem, and you're going to say to him, Anshei Mekneh, how you have a Dechem in Ureinu Yarata, that we are Anshei Mekneh. That's actually a fascinating discussion in and of itself, what Anshei Mekneh means. We usually assume that it means that they are people who take care of animals, okay? And that's probably what it means, but it may actually mean people of stature, which is fascinating because Mekneh means people who are koneh. Koneh means acquire, people who acquire things. I think I once wrote an article about this because it's just a fascinating term. They don't refer to them as Anshei Mekneh when they go to Paro. This is what Yosef tells them to do, but they don't do that, okay? They say, we were Roei Tzon, we're shepherds. They don't say Anshei Mekneh. Anyway, say to them, Anshei Mekneh, you have a definitely the reign of Yarata, we are Anshei Mekneh. That's what you're supposed to say to them. Ba'avur, in order that, Teshvu Be'eretz Goshen, so that you can settle and live in the land of Goshen, Kiso Avas Mitzrayim Kol Roei Tzon. Because So Avas Mitzrayim is Kol Roei Tzon. All shepherds of sheep are To Avas Mitzrayim. Okay, what does To Avas Mitzrayim mean? What does To Avas Mitzrayim mean? Toeva, right? 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 Makes sense. Right? Well, what does that mean then? If Toav Avas Mitzrayim means it's a Toeva, what's the Toeva?
It's an abomination.
Right. So is that what it means? So tell me what this means. What is Yosef telling them to do? Explain to me. Yosef's telling them, go tell Paro you're Anshei Mekneh because Toav Avas Mitzrayim Kol Roei Tzon.
They worship the about people who ate their
dogs. Okay, well, who's to say that shepherds are eating sheep?
Competition. No, but that's true.
But that's not what he's saying to tell them. Saying, you are Anshei Mekneh. Meaning, I have to be honest with you. I hear what you're saying. But until I actually read this, something which has been bothering me for a very long time, I didn't realize how much it bothered me until I read what he says on this. Yosef is... What is Paro going to say to them? Paro is going to say, you're going to go to the land of Goshen, which is Mituv Eretz Mitzrayim. What does Tuv Eretz Mitzrayim mean?
It's the best.
Okay? Yosef says, you're going to go and tell Paro that you're on Shei Mekneh in order that you will get to live in the land of Goshen, which is the best. Ki Toavas Mitzrayim Kol Roei Tzon, because Egypt hates Roei Tzon. Sorry, something doesn't follow. That doesn't make any sense. If you want to get Paro to give you the best, and that's what Yosef's telling them, you're going to tell him that you're a profession that Egypt hates? How does that... It doesn't make any sense. Have you heard what I'm saying? In the back of my mind, this bothered me. I just never really articulated it. So he's going to tell us that Tov As Mitzrayim is not to be interpreted the way that we've been interpreting it. Tov As Mitzrayim means it's disgusting to Egypt, people who take care of sheep. Now, let's take what you just said, Jerry. Okay? Egypt values the sheep. Now, if nobody takes care of the sheep, what's going to happen to the sheep? Right? Okay? Now, let's use India today. I've never been to India, but I've heard that cows are sacred animals there and that they're not to be bothered. But if nobody's taking care of the cows, I don't know what's going to happen with the cows. I have no idea. Somebody has to take care of cows. I would only imagine that if you're not allowed to herd a cow, fine. But you have to treat a cow with respect, treat a cow with dignity, and the bottom line is they're cows. So I don't know. I didn't do research on cow herders in India. But I would imagine that people who take care of cows are probably, like, it's probably like a nice job. I mean, it's probably something which is respected.
I also have seen, at least in reports, that shepherds, when they need to, they actually eat the sheep.
Okay, that may very well be. That might be forbidden. It could be that they use the wool of the sheep. I don't know. It's not necessarily so that shepherds are eating sheep. Right? I mean, you look at take Yaakov, for example. Yaakov has tons of sheep. He could be selling sheep. What?
He never touched any of
them. Right. I'm saying he could be selling sheep. He could be shearing sheep. Right. I mean, we don't know what they're using the sheep for. But you know, there's money in sheep.
Whatever. I think that was what Yaakov was doing, just to be on a higher level with the sheep.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But again, the idea that Tovas Mitzrayim means something with terrible is it just it doesn't flow logically by any stretch of imagination.
Yeah, but could it be?
Okay, all right. Listen, that's all that could be. But let's see.
He's saying, tell them that you are unchained men.
Yeah.
That's cattle. That's not sheep. So it could be that because you're going to go there. And Kitoavas Mitzrayim Kol Roei Tzom, that either they're going to be looked upon as being competition for them, mm-hmm. you don't want to set that up. You're cattlemen. You're not going to in any way be a threat to the people of
Fine.
The ocean.
That's okay, so then I'm just going to ask you a question based on what I said before. So why would that earn them the best of Egypt?
Because
if Goshen
because it's Yosef's family.
So then just say you're my brothers. Give us the best because we're Yosef's family. Why does he have to say we're Anshei Mikneh? Okay, and there's something missing here. That's why I found this to be something worth looking into. Okay? So Lamaforshim Toavas Lashon Mius Ubizayon. Right? I mean, that's what everybody says. The Toavas means Mius, disgusting, Bizayon, you know, and degrading.
That's not part of what he told them to say. That is a
reason. Oh, no, that's fine. No, correct. He told them to say. No, I mean, right. In other words, Yosef is saying, you're going to tell them you're Anshei Mikneh. In order that, and right, Yosef is saying that what the result is going to be is that Ba'avur Teshuv Be'eretz Goshen, so that you'll end up living in Goshen. Ki Tovas Mitzrayim Kol Roei Tzom. So that could be an explanation, or the Torah could be explaining to us whether Yosef is telling them or whether the Torah is telling us. It doesn't matter.
And that's the way our Torah
works. Fine, okay, that's fine. But the question is, what is Tovas Mitzrayim? And it would seem that Tovas Mitzrayim would actually be to their benefit, to be Tovas Mitzrayim. Now, again, if Tovas Mitzrayim is something bad, you know, Yosef, I like you, but your family, you know, they can have the slums. I really
That's
am not.
Why they keep them separate.
Fine, but again, why the best land? Goshen is Tuv Eretz Mitzrayim. Okay? Right, so one of the points which he makes here is that later on Moshe says Hein Nisbach as Toavas Mitzrayim Belonis Kalu, something like that, like we're going to take the Toavas Mitzrayim and slaughter it at the time of the Korban Pesach, like isn't that going to make such a big to do? Now, it could be, but again, Toavas, why would that become the point is that Toavas Mitzrayim, when you call Toavas Mitzrayim the sheep, then all of a sudden, you're clearly indicating that Tovas Mitzrayim is not referring to shepherds, and it's not referring to something which is bad. Because if the idea that we're going to slaughter Tovas Mitzrayim is something which is going to be very troubling to Egypt, then Tovas Mitzrayim has to be something now which is good in one perspective. Now, somebody once told me that the word toeva, you know, Joe, you said before, you know, correctly, that toeva means an abomination. Okay? That's one way of translating abomination. Another way of translating toeva is that there's actually an English word which is pretty similar to toeva, and that is taboo. Taboo. Something which is pretty negative. Now, once you go into that realm of translating toeva in that fashion, first of all, kind of recouches what all the toevas of the Torah are, if indeed that is the interpretation. Now, these are things which are, you know, toevas, they're bad. Now, most toevas are forbidden in the Torah. They're taboo, and the Torah, you know, again, you don't have to call it an abomination. I mean, I'll just use a very popular one today that a lot of people, you know, get all hung up about. Yeah, we have a prohibition of Mishkav Zachar, the homosexual act. Now, I am of the view that we have a negative view of the act, but not of the people who engage in it. They're people. So if they do something which the Torah prohibits, it's an iser. It's a Torah prohibition. That doesn't mean that they are disgusting people. I don't believe that at all. I think that they're human beings as well, and they're engaging in something which is forbidden by the Torah because it's toeva. Now, what's the definition of toeva? I mean, if God put this into people's minds that this is something which you do, then okay. So, but it's not the natural order. Obviously, you can't produce children, which seems to be the natural order. But so it's taboo. What does that mean? So people who do it, they're violating the Torah prohibition. Does that mean that they are abominable people? I don't think that that's fair. They're human beings. They're created with Tzelem Elokim. So it's important to remember that, not to negate the Torah prohibition, that's clear, but how do you view the people who do these? People who steal and cheat in business. It's a toeva. Does that mean that they are you know, awful, disgusting people? They could be nice people otherwise. They're doing something which is taboo. It's just not done in good society. Yeah, whatever that means. So Tov Asp Mitzrayim, what does taboo mean? Taboo could be bad. Taboo could mean, hey, don't touch that. And that's where he says, go skip to the part where it says Ulafizeh. Tov Asp Mitzrayim, you have it? You see where it is? Yeah, it's on page 4. Yeah, it's the end of line 6. Okay, Lefizeh. Tovas Mitzrayim Dechan, Ein Arach Mitzad Yisrael. Since the idea of something being Tovas Mitzrayim, that's from the perspective of Yisrael. Okay, Kamoshka's Rashi, Tovas Mitzrayim, that it's taboo to touch it, meaning that Israel sees that, what's the sheep? The sheep is Tovas Mitzrayim. It's taboo to touch it, because if you touch it, you're messing with Egypt's culture. This is something which they value tremendously. Okay, that is, it's just what a fascinating way of twisting our perspective. Let's see. Just there's a long parenthesis here. I don't remember where the parenthesis ends. Okay, well, let's just read through it. The tigma minavel anochi, right? Tough aleph beis. That is, that he said. I mean, he's making it similar to tough ayin beis. I'm not sure what that stuff means. Kachatev makom tev. V'taam to avas mitzrayim kol roitzon. Here it is. He's explaining what tovas mitzrayim kol roitzon means. Roitzon heim tovel mitzrayim klamar ahuv mitzlam. He says the people who are roitzon, are beloved in Egypt. and some wise fellow told me, showed me something that Unklus writes, gam kan are be'era demitzare dechalinli kol royana v'nir da'ato gam ken kitel el. Okay, this essentially means that somebody who takes care of animals is an honored profession. V'ukamamar amadam v'amashavesh ne dvarim zel zeh. In other words, that when you have things that are put together in this way, that the chaf makes a comparison between them. You have to make a chaf of comparison. That there is, that's a quote from somewhere, B'dameh Amari L'chatas, that the Mari, whatever the Mari is compared to a Karban Chatas. Kesem Ki'ilu Amar, Chatas Kesem rather, Ki'ilu Amar Kito Avas, B'tamo Kemosh, and here's the point. Ta'amo Kemosh Atzon Shehu Yirasam, the Tzon is something which they fear, or revere rather, that's probably a better word, To'eva, it is taboo. Chashuv beinehem, it's important in their eyes. Kacha roei atzon nichbadim etzlam. So too, the shepherds are honored to them. In other words, again, to avas mitzrayim means it's something which is special, which we don't touch. It's taboo to bother the sheep. So those who take care of to avas mitzrayim are honored.
Just turning everything upside down.
I know, isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? And so what he's saying is, again, and he focuses on this, on the word key and the letter kaf there, which is saying that it's the same thing. Tohavas Mitzrayim, Kol Ro'eh Tzon, there's an equation being made here between the two. The Tohavas Mitzrayim equals sheep. Sheep are honored, and those who take care of the sheep are honored. And so now, what Yosef is telling them is, tell them that you take care of sheep. Why? This way you're honored. This way you get Tov Eretz Mitzrayim, you get the best land of Egypt. Why? Because you take care of sheep. Sheep need good grass. Sheep need good land. And therefore, you'll be placed in the best place.
So why didn't he say, we're Ro'eh Tzon instead of Anshei...
So that gets into a different question about Anshei Mikneh, but look at what they actually do tell Paro. Okay, Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Paro Elachav, Mama Asechem, what do you guys do? Vayomer El Paro, Ro'eh Tzon Avadecha. Vayomer El Paro, think of the next thing. So, and they tell Paro, Ein Mir'ah, there's no place for our sheep to eat, Ki Chaved Arav Eretz Kanan. V'yatal Yeshivu Navadecha Eretz Goshen. So it says, let us stay in Eretz Goshen. And Pasuk Vav, Eretz Mitzrayim lefanecha, he made tav haaretz, Hashem v'zavich v'esachecha, Yeshivu Eretz Goshen. Paro, right? I mean, now,
so that makes more sense.
Your speed. It's your speed, right? It's your speed. Good. Okay, so now I said that this is parallel. This is actually related to the next thing here, which he has, which is the very end of the Parsha. Look at the very end of the Parsha. Okay? So you remember what happens is that Yosef eventually owns everything in Egypt. And he gives a tax of a fifth onto everybody and eventually owns everything. Who's exempt from the tax?
Greece.
Right? Rachad Masa Kohanim Levadam. Lo Yisrael Paro. It's Pasuk Chafes. Okay, so let's take a look. Rak Ad Masak, Pasuk Chafes, this is page 266. Rak Ad Masak Onim Lo Kana, he didn't buy the land of the Kohanim. Ki Chag Lo Kohanim Eis Paro, Ve'achulis Chukam Asher Nasan Lan Paro, Akein Lo Makru Asad Masam. So the priests, they didn't have to sell their property, and they weren't taxed in this way. Pasuk Chavav, look at the last two Pasuk in the Parsha. Yosem Osel, Yosef Lechok, Adayam Azel, Ad Mas Mitzrayim. Adayam Azel means, by the way, Adayam Azeh, meaning the time when Moshe is writing down the Torah. Okay, so in other words, Moshe is coming from a very previous experience, having been in Egypt, saying that whatever the law Yosef established then actually remained the law all the way through the time that until the Jews left Egypt. Rakat Masakon and Lodam, Loy Salapar, Vayeshu Yisrael Beretz Yisrael, Beretz Goshen, Vayechazubah, Vayefu Vayebrimot. Okay, so now think about this for a second. If Yosef he's in a situation where he can do something kind for his family. Okay, just let's look at this for a second. Okay, you know the taxation bill I think passed today in the House and the Senate. So, right now, if you're Yosef and you're the president of the United States, you're the king in Egypt. Okay, now let's assume for a second that nobody's going to get on you for your cronyism or your nepotism. What are you going to do? You're going to throw this exemption on the Kohanim, and who else are you going to try to?
Your family.
Your family, right? Of course. So, and what's the first thing that Paro tries to do? When we're going to see in Parsha Shmos, Vayasimu alav sarei nisim. They tax the Jews. What they weren't, the Jews weren't taxed until that point.
Maybe they were tax exempt.
They were tax exempt. Why? Because of Yosef. So take a look what he says. I just found this to be fascinating. Take a look what he says. Ad masakonim lo biro mefarshim ato elas ba'dazu. The commentaries do not explain why the exemption on the priests of Egypt. Below, not only that, El Shech Zira Kasavara Pamasof Anyan, and they repeat it again at the end of it, like we just saw, in the last two psukim in the Parsha. V'nir Lamarsh is Kavim Bezeh, Toelos Dolo the Beis Aviv. This is Yosef's Kavana, Yosef's intent here, was something great for his family. Ki Behavara Sa'am Li Arim, Ad Shelo Nishar Echad Bechaz Kasar Tso. Yosef basically created the first ghettos, or, you know, basically he created some urban development, where all the Egyptians were thrown out of their own land. Okay, nobody owned their land anymore. Who owned it all? Yosef or Paro? Yosef and Paro. Yosef was controlling it. Hotzi gam koto shvei eretz Goshen leretz acheres. So yes, Yosef's family was in Goshen, but who else was in Goshen? Other people. Right, you can. The Jews could be living in this town, but guess what? Other people live here too. Before the Jews got there, they were never thrown out. There was no reason to throw them out. But now that Yosef, on behalf of Paro, is owning all the land, so all those who lived in Goshen, other than Yosef's family, out. The Hoshiv Sham Kol Beis Aviv, but he left his family there. But I know you Beis Aviv Domim L'Shar Toshvei Medina L'Seis HaChameshis L'Paro. Yosef's family, they were like regular citizens. Okay, I mean, they may have been treated nicely. They were put in Goshen, but you're in Goshen. Okay, so you have to pay the taxes of Goshen. You're in the municipality of Goshen. וכן המציא תחבולה זו, שיוכלו הכהנים את זכוכם הניתן להם, והדמסם לא תהיה מכורה לפרעה. So Yosef came up with this brilliant idea, that the Kohanim, they're going to get their share, which is given to them, and their land is not going to belong to Paro. And they don't have to pay the tax of the fifth. And this way, his brothers, his family, are going to be included in this exemption. We already determined that they are shepherds, and they're important. So what are they like? If they're taking care of the gods of Egypt, they're basically what? They're basically priests, right? Like we saw before. So I skipped all the commentary in between, because when I saw this, I was like, wow, it's so clearly connected. They're like Kohanim, who take care of the gods. Just like the Kohanim are exempt from the fifth, from paying the tax of the fifth. So too are those who take care of the gods. So in giving an exemption for priests, because who's not going to support? Of course, right? It's parsonage, whatever you want to, right? You know, you give them the exemption, it's tax exempt because of their religious status. So but once you do that, then by dint of their position of taking care of these gods, the Yosef's family is exempt as well. Amar Vayechazuba. They held on to that job. And they also held on to the land of Goshen that became their achuza, their inheritance. She'em mutal ala shum mas, no tax. Hefach shar toshvei haaretz, the opposite of everybody else. Shelo yisalem achuza, because they, the other people, did not have an inheritance. They didn't have a land which they can call their own. L'chein ischayvu l'mas achomesh. So everybody else had to pay that fifth. V'yonatan benuziel amar b'targumo ara duchumrania lozavan. That the land of the Kohanim didn't have to pay. So they were. This basically became a savior for the people for Yosef's family. Okay, because remember, even during slavery, where did the Jews live? In Goshen, and the fact that they had property rights and that so. The whole concept of the Vayasimo Lev Serei Nisim later on, yeah, that put a monkey wrench into the existence in Egypt, but their homes were never taken away. They became slaves, but they were never homeless. And we know that from the whole story of the last night of Egypt. Right? They're all in their own homes, they have their own doors and Passover, etc. And I just think that this is a fascinatingly fresh and very compelling way of looking at the way Yosef presented his family and how he was able to protect his family for a very long time while they were in Egypt.